SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online. And at our website, too, stevebick.com. Bit of a unsettled morning here in New York, and I think downstate as well. They're going to end up with some rain mid-morning into early afternoon. We'll see how extensive it is and what it does to the turf action, including our little filly. She's not so little anymore, but Minute Mouse is supposed to go in the nightcap, and she was part of that off the turf and then canceled race 10 days ago or whatever it was. So we'll try again. We'll see. Keep an eye on that. We're also in the fifth today with the Bell, Carlisle Bell. Going to turn back, I guess. I don't know. I think we got hustled into the race, but it's not a terrible spot. Not a terrible spot. Something to look forward to later this afternoon, 5 o'clock. It is the afternoon action, the 3 o'clock start in New York, and Churchill, of course, with their later Thursday card. The two of them kind of integrate New York and Churchill. That's really the motivation of this whole Thursday concept. And they're going to have really, what, two? You got two night cards here this week, Thursday night and then Saturday. If you haven't had a chance yet to dive into the PPs, they drew that card early and got things out pretty quickly yesterday at Churchill. And the Matt Wynn starts the stakes sequence, Mr. Money. Proverb coming back out of that Oaklawn Invitational behind Night Ops and Laughing Fox. Knicks Go trying to reboot the season. John Sadler, and Sadler didn't mention Nolo Contesto was coming to Churchill. How about that? So the West Coast Invasion, we'll talk about Santa Anita in a minute. But this is a nice group. Signalman as well. Limonite from the rail. Coming off the allowance win in the slop. So the Matt Wynn. Nice group of seven. Signalman. Did I say Signalman? Limonite, Signalman, Nolo Contesto, Knicks Go, Proverb, Mr. Money, and Armistice Day as well for Tom Drury. Coming out of a turf allowance try. And actually Armistice Day, who our friend Lansden Robbins and Bruce Lunsford own. And, of course, the two of them, famous for First Samurai. But this is a declaration of war out of Harmony Lodge. How about that? How about that? I'll come back to Harmony Lodge in a minute because how about that? That's interesting. Her name came up the other day. Or not the other day, but yesterday, in reviewing some pedigrees as part of the sale action, which we got to talk about as well. But a nice Matt Wynn starts the action. Then the Wise Dan. And the Wise Dan with a big, bulky field. And with every conversation we had during the week, horses kept getting added, including March to the Arch, Mrs. Weber's Arch Gelding, Mark Cassie had mentioned, and, of course, Hot Springs that Steve Asmussen had mentioned. They got added to the already bulky cast, Jeff Mullins. It's in the post. The 7-year-old gelding making his seasonal debut. Multiple graded stake winner, of course. Phil D'Amato in town with Noble Commander coming over from Indiana and a win there. How about Inspector Lindley, kind of a personal favorite. It's kind of stubbed his toe a little bit in the in the Dixie. Column Road for the Wyckoffs and Mike Maker. Bourbon Resolution, Ian Wilkes. Van Ally winner from the spring at Keeneland. Now gets over to the grass. I don't think he's ever... This is his first grass start, if I'm not mistaken. It is. And he's a New Year's Day. No reason why Son of Street Cry can't get turf runners. It's a nice, solid cast. First Premio for Cassie. Did we miss anything? Holiday Stone. Making the first start for Eddie Keneally. Of course, long associated with George Weaver for Jim and Susan Hill. That nice CM Riep, too. Ben Colebrook. The horse that Randy Hill bred and Mark DeTample is campaigning. So, big, fun field in the Wise Dan. It then gives way to the Fleur de Lis, where La Troyenne winner, She's a Julie, will try to add another distaff starter, win in your in type to Midnight Bizou's success Saturday. She'll line up against the late Blue Prize, the very steadily advancing, go Google yourself, Samantha Siegel's homebred filly. Just missed in the Double Dog Dare. Just a field of six, but quality, quality fillies and mares in there. And then your Stephen Foster, and plenty of excitement and interest in here. The Foster cast, if you didn't see it yet, let me give it to you from the rail. Thirst for Life for Wes Hawley with Miguel Mena. Rated R Superstar, Cipriano Contreras, Rodney Prescott. Leperu aboard Runaway Ghost, Todd Venture, coming off the Sunland Park handicap win. And, you know, fully recovered from the almost year off. Seeking the Soul, Dallas Stewart, of course, Johnny V. Al-Katam for Danny Pites, for Shadwell, Channing Hill, coming off two straight wins since moving to the Pites barn. Gift Box, discussed earlier this week with John Sadler, Joel Rosario. Tenfold, Steve Asmussen, let you know that they were running when we talked to him on Monday. Ricardo Santana, that's seven already. King Zachary, now with Graham Motion for Tom Conway. And Javier Castellano gets aboard for the first time. Tom's the Tot, Al Stahl for the Bensons, Bridgemo, Quip, Rudy Brissett, Florent Giroux, the Windstar China Horse Club, SF Racing, a familiar ownership agglomeration. Maker and Michael Way, and the Hooties Racing also partnered up with Exulting, a 62.5 claim that turned around and won that Oaklawn Mile. Very typical pattern for Mike Maker. And Yoshida draws the outside, the far outside, first start back since the Dubai World Cup. Unbelievable. What a cast. Just terrific. The Foster. Clear your deck for Saturday night. And then the Regret is the fifth of the stakes. These are the three-year-old fillies on the grass. And not the most familiar group, actually. Shug's got Hungry Kitten. We've talked about her with Shug, and Coffee Pot, and Phillips has got Winter Sunset. She started her career with a nice bang back last November, coming out of the Edgewood placement. How about Varenka, the George Strawbridge homebred for Graham Motion? Norm Cassie. Norm's got a pair in here, I believe. Yeah, Hard Legacy from Mrs. Whitney, and Belle Laura was pretty nice. And Choate Bridge that we've talked about with Brendan Walsh as well. And also on the outside, Kenny McPeak, Princess Carolina for Three Chimneys. So a really, really strong. There's your all-stakes pick five, right? The Matt Wynn, the Wise Dan, the Fleur de Lis, the Foster, and the Regret. All right? There you go. And we will get serious about that certainly tomorrow. Marty McGee and much, much more. A couple of storylines to touch on from yesterday. Of course, the sale. And you heard people really liked it. People enjoyed that, right? That was really fun. It got a nice reaction. I knew it would be kind of not unique, but it would be kind of a little novelty to bid live on the air on a horse. And the Datalink gelding that'll head down to Chuck Simon. And we're not done. We're looking at two today and looking at two tomorrow. Would like to get one New York bred to bring back for Saratoga this summer. That's the plan. But in the meantime, the sale results and the activity at OBS, it modest, not a rousing start per se to the festivities. There were a couple of nice numbers, you know, two and a quarter up to 400. The session leader, the Tappet Colt, that comes out of a familiar name, Enchanted Rock. Enchanted Rock was Suge, Enchanted Rock, and there you go, Emery Hamilton. That was the session topper, consigned by PickView, and Mickey Gonzalez, M Racing. He said he wasn't necessarily, as I saw a quote, that he wasn't necessarily there to buy anything. But he saw the drill and got interested. Kind of funny. That's all it takes sometimes. That's how we got involved, frankly. That's exactly how we got involved in that Datalink to begin with. Was down at the sale in March, had no intention of doing anything, and next thing you know, you're intrigued. And this was, you know, this is a horse. It's funny. This is a colt that is only a two-year-old and has yet gone through one, two, three different sales, and now four. was a Keeneland Yearling RNA, then was sold at the October sale, phasing, then RNA'd at the Gulfstream sale. But he's been a steady developer. He was $190,000 as a fall yearling, and then he RNA'd for three and a quarter at Gulfstream, and then fetches $400,000. So the handling proved out, actually. The highest priced filly was the Constitution that went to Phil and Christine Hatfield, $280,000 for the daughter of Dr. Zick. And in one of those weird coincidences, I actually got a chance to say hello to Joan Scott on Saturday. She was at Belmont, trained Dr. Zick, right? Joan Scott, I'm almost positive. Won the Madison. $280,000 for the Constitution filly. And there were a handful of other, mid hundreds to 200 or so But the numbers were a little behind last year. And I talked to Aaron Yagoda, who's down there, and Aaron actually bought a pair, and he's going to handle things for us today. He says it's a little light in terms of traffic. He was selling a few to wrap up his 2-year-old training sale campaign. Had pinhooked, I forget what he said, I think 13 or 14 from last fall. So we'll keep an eye on the sale. They start in about 45 minutes. I'm going to come back. We'll talk about, I mentioned the Santa Anita news. There's yet another wrinkle and a really the tail wagging the dog to a large degree. Back after this, later, Tony Black, Steve Haskin, Rich Eng, and more.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use ExpressFund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
We're back. No, that's not what I meant. There we go. Coming back here, and we're going to try to use the opportunity to catch up with Joe Orsino in the UK, who, of course, other than Wesley Ward, the only other North American runner that's going to try at Royal Ascot next week. Tomorrow we'll talk to Nick Luck again. Started the week with Nick, and then we'll finish it up too and get his full preview. The story I wanted to get to at Santa Anita yesterday, another tail wagging the dog, and I just don't know where this ends. Now, in response to Governor Gavin Newsom's direction, yet another person who knows so much about equine physiology, the CHRB and Stronach Group, they're going to create a safety review board, essentially. Five-person committee that is going to review entries and decide based on the same information that's been available generally. They're going to determine if a horse should be allowed to run. So you can, I don't know. I mean, there's only six cards left to produce, but this is such a slippery slope that you can't possibly expect anything positive. Horses are still going to go wrong. And when that happens, what are you then going to say? What do they say at that point after all the other protocols that every racetrack employs, and now these hoop jumps that and redundancies that somehow are supposed to weed out a horse that, you know, may or may not be at risk? And that, you know, that's the definition. You know, they're looking for horses that, you know, are at risk. And then they're going to deny entry to those horses. I mean, they're reacting, being reactive like this is just a unproductive mechanism. And then comes the disingenuous and absolutely fraudulent claim, Alexis Podesta, Secretary of Business, Consumer Services, and Housing Agency, which oversees the CHRB. This is unprecedented in American horse racing. No, it isn't. Never have we had this additional layer of review with a team of experts to connect data points and confer on the well-being. Yes, we have. They've been doing it in New York for 6 years. Because when they had a spate of fatalities, they put together a task force that reviewed everything and came up with a set of logical responses, not this knee-jerk stupidity by a pack of completely inept management. This particular quote is, you just bristle at this. This phony smokescreen that, we're leading the way to reform. No, you're not. You're blundering your way into one fiasco after another. This is unprecedented. No, everything that went on in New York out of the 2012 winter experience. Yeah. And the results are, you know, the results are out there to be gleaned. What do they say? What do they say? They're working on a premise right now there that somehow magically no horse is ever going to, you know, die ever again. They've created an unattainable goal that can only reflect negatively on everybody. You know, the signing off of by the veterinarians on entry slips. That way, I mean, they've already tried to paint the, you know, the trainers as inept. Now we're going to paint the veterinarians as inept. And now with this five-person committee, when a horse goes wrong, the stewards. So what does that leave you? I mean, you're opening yourself up to even further ridicule and questioning of competency. Just unbelievable. So that's my I was promising myself not to get annoyed, but that particular quote, this completely phony attempt to just shield themselves from their own blundering is just really, I mean, they've had an opportunity since March to say mistakes have been made and we're going to do a comprehensive, our own, you know, complete overhaul and research to fix it, and the outside pressure and interference isn't helping anybody. And instead of using the experience that the rest of the industry had, including Del Mar and NYRA, who both, when they went through this experience, said, this is on us and we're going to figure it out. That's not what they did out there. Out there, they said, oh, it's not us. It's got to be something else. Instead of just accepting responsibility, I mean, what has happened to that exactly? I guess that's a society-wide, the accepting of responsibility. At no point through this entire thing, and honestly, who among us would not have been sympathetic? All that had to be said by Santa Anita management is, we misjudged this marketplace. We tried to do something that worked elsewhere. It didn't work here. They might have also added, we were told that it wouldn't work, but we went ahead anyway. If they had just said that, and you know, we're gonna reevaluate and we're gonna review every aspect like they've done in other jurisdictions and make the appropriate improvements and changes, that's all that was necessary. Instead, they've just opened up the industry to widespread and examination and condemnation. Congratulations. And a completely, they've created a completely untenable situation that, you know, that can only result in further, you know, concern and questioning. I understand, you know, finishing the meet. I mean, that's a separate conversation. But what exactly is going to happen in July and August and then when the autumn meet rolls around? And, you know, the Breeders' Cup, who's in a, you know, they've also put the Breeders' Cup in a completely impossible situation. So, I don't know. We'll see. I best of luck on these, you know, finishing this off. The last six cards will be under this new safety review board. Veterinarians, CHRB veterinarians, stewards. So, you know, that's the same scenario that exists, by the way, in New York, that, you know, the state vets can scratch a horse, and the stewards can scratch a horse, and the racing office can question an entry. I mean, they're claiming that they reinvented the wheel. They didn't. Historic safety enhancements, says Rick Bedecker. Let's do this. We're going to take a break and come back. And got Jeremy Plonk and potentially Joe Orsino from the UK. Excited for Joe to have this chance. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At The Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Tickets to the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival are on sale now. New York's premier three-day racing festival returns to historic Belmont Park June 6th through 8th. Buy tickets today and enjoy trackside reserve seats or enhance your experience with one of our premium hospitality packages to make this an unforgettable event. Grandstand admission starts at $15 and three-day festival passes are also available. Buy now at Ticketmaster.com or visit BelmontStakes.com. The Belmont Stakes, where champions are crowned.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
At The Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Every inch of sky's got a star. Every inch of skin's got a scar. I guess you got everything now. Every inch of space in your head is filled up with the things that you read. I guess you got everything now. Every film that you've ever seen fills the spaces up in your dreams. That reminds me.
We're back at the races, 25 to top of the hour. Tony Black, Steve Askin, everyone hanging on about the Matzah Odyssey. So anxious to hear, Steve. And the Matzah did get there. A lot of people asked at Belmont on Saturday, did the Haskins get? Yes, they got the Matzah. Thanks to Aaron Yagoda, the Matzah kingpin. Yes, the king of Matzah. I was trying to get Maury Wolf to visit, and Maury said he was up really, really late watching, I don't know, some baseball game, he said, that went 4.5 hours. And so I wanted to ask about the Stanley Cup Final, and really fun last night. I mean, that was, you know, I watched bits and pieces when I could during the preceding six games, and I have to admit that I've never been I'm a Sabre fan, so I'm certainly happy to see the Bruins get beat. But and actually getting a little tired of, you know, the Boston, New England, you know, they're tiresome. But, you know, the Blues, this kid, Binnington, was just, I mean, he was unbelievable. And then the storyline that, you know, had been kind of all over the internet about Scott Berry, the Blues fan that bet in January. He was out in Vegas and he bet $400 at 250-1 for the Blues to win the Cup. And then all week, all through the finals, he's been, you know, getting offers on that prop swap, you know, where you can trade your, sell off your future wagers and more. So I reached out to Maury because I was curious about whether he thought, you know, these numbers that were being offered were, you know, made sense. I don't know if you saw them, but, you know, he was going, basically was on a path to win 100,000. And before game one, he was offered 41,000 for the ticket. Before game two, and of course, you know, the vagaries are based on, you know, on how the Blues were doing, you know, through the series. And so 41,000 before the series started, and then down to 28,000, then back up to 48,000 when they went up, then down a little, 38,000. Then after they were poised, up 3-2, he got, 75,000 before game six. Before game six, 75,000, and then before game seven, 36,000. So he was determined to see it through. Jeremy Plonk joins us, and certainly, you know, being in the Pittsburgh area, Jeremy can appreciate hockey and Stanley Cup winners. The Penguins had a nice run of their own. But the equation of this, I thought was interesting. And you know, people congratulating him, and there was video of him last night setting off champagne bottles and all that. But, you know, Jeremy, and I'll incorporate you immediately into this. $400 to win 100,000, and he put the bet down in January,
right?
When they were struggling, actually, and you know, that makes it a pretty cool storyline. And 100,000 is a nice fancy number. But is it me, or do we have this opportunity 7 days a week in racing?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like the old deal or no deal. You know, you go along and. And as you get closer to the big number, the offers change. And as you get further from the numbers, of realizing the sequence, the numbers dwindle in what somebody would offer for it. I know these types of wagers have been pitched in Arizona at the symposium in past years. And, I think that's a consideration. I think more than happens in the sports betting world, obviously, is competition for horse racing. But can also be, competition is the spur of innovation, And so we see what happens, with the guy on Jeopardy who was the sports bettor, and all of a sudden sports bettors have a little bit different place in society, They're not looked at necessarily as the dregs of the earth like some people might have, that he's actually an intellectual. And so that can be good in terms of reputation. These different things we see here where, when I first started doing shows with ESPN back in the early 2000s, there was a big debate on which exotic wagers we could show on the results screen. Obviously, win, place, show was like part of the news, but we didn't show like the superfecta payoffs and things like that, like a lot of the exotics or any of the multi-race wagers or anything like that. That was considered too gambling for TV, back when it was illegal to gamble. Of course, it was always legal parimutuel, and that's like the juxtaposition of, like an ESPN back in those days, couldn't even fully embrace the gambling of horse racing, Okay, well, you can give the payoff up to this, but not for these wagers and stuff like that. And that actually happened, that's from someone who was working behind the scenes. I can tell you for a fact that happened, and we're only talking, early 2000s, 15, 16, 18 years ago. So, all these perceptions change. Now it's completely okay for Scott Van Pelt every night at midnight to bring out Stanford Steve and talk about the tough beats and who didn't cover the over and things like that. It's mainstreaming a lot of the things that we've talked about for years in horse racing. And so that innovation, maybe it's a catalyst to finally do something, whereas we kind of sit back in horse racing and say, well, our parimutuel system works. This is what we do. We have a monopoly on it, so let's just keep doing what we do. Now that we start to see, wow, you can really get some notoriety for something like this, right? I mean, this prop bet that this guy had, or not a prop bet, a futures bet, got this kind of attention. What kind of attention could we get to somebody who had, one of those big wagers on Fupeg back in the days? And I hate to scare Johnny Avello back out of his sleep, because I know that Fupeg was a horse that they took an actual beating on at the Wynn back in the years. I always remember him talking about that. But, why not? Why not talk about some of those kind of people in the public spotlight and who's got what going and what they have in the futures? And so, and these innovative bets that were just symposium fodder in past years, like, oh, wouldn't that be neat? And then everybody just kind of goes, okay, big deal. We move on and we go back to doing what we always do. Maybe we'll start doing something a little bit different. Necessity is the mother of invention, and competition spurs innovation. Those are two things we know. And so, maybe that comes of this. And I think, too, there is an absolute fascination with what goes on in more popular sports among horse racing people. You bring over a guy from tennis to work in the horse racing industry, he's a god. You bring in somebody from the NBA, oh, he's the best television executive we've ever seen. There's a fascination amongst the horse racing industry at the higher levels and at almost every racetrack that if you bring somebody in from an outside industry, they just know something more than we know. So if we see these things successful in other industries, like, oh, my God, a future bet can get that much national publicity and go viral. Oh, well, that now it's legitimized, right? I mean, we wouldn't have done that on our own. But now that we see it happen in hockey and people are willing to put this guy on networks and things like that, now all of a sudden we'll piggyback on it, because horse racing has this obsession of wanting to date the prettier girl than they can get. And so every time something happens in another industry, we just clamor to it. It makes you a day late and a dollar short. If you would have come up with this first, you'd be ahead of the curve. But that tend to be the reactionary and fandom of the racing industry.
We've got future bet wagering. I mean, and certainly, one of the fun things about...
We don't publicize it, is what I'm saying.
Well, we publicize it.
We have these things.
We publicize it internally. Well, and I mean, to be honest, it's a fairly recent phenomenon that because of the sports betting proliferation, I mean, it really only Darren Rovell with his, you know, with his stuff, there's only been there really haven't been a ton of outlets. And there has been.
No, you've got the Daily Wager on ESPN News every single day. You got VSiN. You got the complete network.
I get that. Now,
what I'm saying, right? Sure. So, but what I'm saying is, like, we never even really publicized bettors. You know what I mean? And bets and people who had a big stake on the line. You know, you never went, like, TVG never went and tried to find somebody in the grandstand who was alive to the pick six on the last leg. You know, like. So we could sit with this guy and watch him wiggle and squirm down the stretch, you know, to see if he's going to hit a big one or not. And so, like, these are the kind of things that you can kind of see that, you know, piggybacking the excitement of a fan and a wager is acceptable. You know, it's not only acceptable, it's quite popular.
Well, no, that's well put. And I can certainly recognize, you know, the both internal almost, you know, how's it been termed over the years that, you know, that the people that were in some cases running racing, quote unquote, were embarrassed by the wagering. I mean, this goes back to 1970, you know, when I don't know how many people out there have seen the Hudsucker proxy as many times as I have, but the great scene where Paul Newman you know, pulls the cigar out of his mouth and says, "Do you mean that any slob in a t-shirt can buy our stock?" And it always makes me think of the story that John Nehru told on the show years ago about being sent into the Board of Trustees and saying, "You have," and telling them, he was, Max Hirsch had sent John in and said, "This is what you got to tell them, you know, that the association has to control the off-track betting." And the trustees weren't interested in that. They didn't want to have to deal with a perceived grimy public.
Right.
So that always, I should find that. That's a great, if you haven't seen the Hudsucker proxy,
we've had some of this, like, in marketing, you know, like ExpressBet has, like, the big bet winner, you know, where you get to bet 25,000 on the Preakness and things like that. But I know, like, when
it's internal
TV with that, and again, this is from somebody who's worked on the inside, I can tell you there's a resistance even from the TV people of, like, okay, this is a sponsor spot, so we have to do it. But they don't put a lot of effort into it. Maybe a bump going to the commercial break. Here's the guy with 25,000 on the line, you know? Because it's a sponsor deal. But now, even from a TV network standpoint, maybe they see the popularity that this guy got on his bet for hockey and say, wow, we should actually emphasize this instead of just doing it as a must-do, a have-to, as we call it in sponsorships, you know? Or this is a have-to, you know? This was an ad buy. Because they did the sponsorship, we have to show this guy. So they kind of bury it and just kind of, okay, it's part of the telecast, check off the box. We got the marketing done out of it. But it's actually a news element, you know. It's actually part of the story. I mean, the betting on horse racing and the betting on sports now is starting to become part of the story, not just the external marketing of the industry. And so hopefully things like this will help put the betting as part of the story. And I know there have been tries with shows and things like that. You know, there was the Win Place Show deal they did on Fox Sports with Johnny the Hat or Jimmy the Hat. And, you know, some of those other kind of shows that we've seen come along. You know, they did the Horse Players Tour thing with Bayshock and those guys and all the folks that were involved in that. There have been some, you know, attempts at it. But, again, the part of, like, the story of the whole day of racing that the player is, if not one of the biggest parts, certainly a major influence in the storyline every single racing day.
Yeah, and I want to use, I haven't had a chance yet to discuss this. I didn't get to it with Andy on Tuesday, or with Paul Matisse yesterday, but I haven't discussed the two-day 20-cent pick six yet that was tested at NYRA and was an obvious success. 656,000 in the pool, and it's not as if they were banging the drum for weeks on end. I mean, it was announced, you know, about 10 days out. And, you know, I think most people were aware, and it obviously was a fun wager to tackle. The results, I want everybody to hear the results. You had Catalina Cruiser pay $560, Ahmad paid $1,520, Hockery Kussel paid $39.80, Matoli $9, Bricks and Mortar $3.30, and Sir Winston $22.40. And I got to say, I mean, my ticket stopped with Hog Creek, which was really irksome considering how much I like him. And then I also I kept wavering back and forth about singling Bricks and Mortar and going three deep in the Met, or singling McKenzie and going three deep in the Manhattan. And I did go three deep in the Manhattan, and I went five deep, six through 10 in the Belmont. And I had Catalina Cruiser and I had Ahmad. And my ticket was 72, give or take. The sequence paid over 9,000, paid $9,505. And, you know, not to belabor the 20-cent increment and the fanciful advertising it gets at certain venues about, 20 cents can get you a million. Yeah, sure.
Right.
But the 20-cent increment in this, and in a real micro universe of, 2 days, finite, being paid out, no phony jackpot carryover, blah, blah, blah. This was very attractive. 15% on the one takeout, 15%, and this thing worked. And that 9,000 that you could approach for 20 cents when you had options of singles like Bricks and Mortar or Matoli or even Catalina Cruiser if you liked them more than anybody else, you absolutely, as a small player, could have easily gotten to this. And excuse me, 9,500 times 10 is 95,000. So basically what this guy won with $400, you didn't need to spend $400 to get this. And there's an opportunity here that, as you're suggesting on the marketing side, I mean, there are wagering equations that we have that need to be better merchandised to serious players. I know that the jackpot concept is thought of as a little bit of a lottery thing, but there are serious players, that play it well before the force out. And by the way, force out on Sunday, Father's Day at Santa Anita, it's a million and a half now. So, it's probably 4.5-5 million on Sunday.
Saturday.
That's right. It'll get hit Saturday. That's fine. And then they'll force it out again, a closing day as well. But the current big pool, if it doesn't get hit Saturday, is going to be forced out Sunday. Anyway, you get my point. I mean, this was
right. No, I do.
This was a real textbook sequence.
Yeah, and look, if you study multi-race wagers and things like that, you kind of know two things are kind of balloons in the payoffs, and that's favorites in the first or last leg. I mean, those are the ones people tend to lean on a little bit more if it's a huge favorite in the first leg and the last leg, because I know mathematically and unemotionally it means nothing whether you burst your ticket in the first or second, third, fourth, fifth, or sixth leg. A loser's a loser. But most people are trying to stay alive. That is the mentality of bettors. And when I see a horse like Tacitus, who's going to be 8-5 in the last leg, I promise you Tacitus was over-singled in that pick six because just allowed people to use more combinations in some of the other legs. So Sir Winston may be co-fifth choice in the race at 10-1, but in that pick six, he probably played a lot more like a 25-30-1 shot in terms of the number of times he was used on those tickets. I mean, that's how you kind of – you just look at the payoffs and you go, okay, well, this was a $4 horse, $8 horse, $11 horse. Hog Creek Hustle was a price, and the last race was a price. How did you get to what is the equivalent of a $95,000 payoff for $2? And really, if you looked at it in terms of a $2 pick six, it pays a lot more than $95,000 because people don't have it. You know, with the 20 cent versus $2 players, you know, you just can't multiply it times 10 and say it would have paid this for $2. It would have paid a hell of a lot more for a $2 play because people would have been out, you know, not as many combinations would have been clicking on it as the 20 cent increment. So, you know, that last race is a big deal, and it's kind of a lesson for, you know, anybody. I don't care if you're playing pick threes, pick fours, pick fives, jackpot, rainbow sixes, or whatever, is, you know, the last leg is where you can really get a lot of value in these wagers. And if you beat the favorite, you're going to get an exponential payoff for what you should. And so, you know, when you're structuring your ticket, what is, you know, you try to say, well, what is a good pick four to play today? Well, a favorite that you don't like in the last race, all of a sudden I go, wow, I think the favorite's vulnerable in the last race today. This is the pick four I want to start to look at. So when you're trying to attack and say, well, what days do I bet? What days don't I bet? What sequences do I like? Do I like the early pick four or the late pick four? Early pick five or late pick five? Look at the vulnerability of the favorite in the last leg, because that's really going to help your payoff.
Shift gears a little bit, Jeremy. I did want to get that two-day pick six conversation in, and I appreciate the feedback. Let's get your countdown to the crown coda and the wrap-up for Triple Crown season 2019.
Well, 14th year of Countdown to the Crown in the books. We don't do a recap. We count down to the Belmont. We do every year. So really the only recap will be what I do on your show. We'll be back in January for season 15, first Friday in January every year. Looking forward to 2020 already. But, you know, this Triple Crown season was one that was, I don't want to say deflating because that's such a negative word, but it didn't rise. There was no crescendo to it, you know. I mean, kind of the biggest thing we saw was the 22 minutes after the wire, right? And kind of everything that happened after that in the Derby took away from the next two steps. And that's not fair to Mark Cathy, who had, you know, a remarkable run winning, you know, two-thirds of the Triple Crown with two different horses. And War of Will specifically and Sir Winston, absolutely give them their props. You know, give credit to Country House, who ran a really good race in running second in the Derby. And one of my favorite things in any print that I read this year was in our Express Bet wager guide, for the Preakness, Jeff Siegel termed the phrase the kissed-in winner of the Kentucky Derby, Country House. And I just think that was such a great use of words by Jeff, that kissed-in, you know, like if you're shooting pool and you play a ball off another ball and it goes into the pocket. That kind of, like, that describes exactly what happened. And we had a kissed-in winner of the Kentucky Derby this year. And, you know, for fans of racing and like the horsemen involved, if you're like horseman centric, this was a very satisfying Triple Crown to see Bill Mott, Mark Cathy, and again, Mark Cathy win Triple Crown races. That's phenomenal to see Flavian Pratt, Tyler Gaffalione, and then Joel Rosario. Of course, Joel, you know, with experience in these big races, but to see Flavian and Tyler won the first two. I mean, you know, we're talking about where are the good young jockeys in America, and everybody that we kind of revel, you know, Mike Smith's in his 50s and Johnny V and Javier Castellano. You know, you've got the Ortiz brothers obviously established as the young guns of racing. Now we've got a couple more that have, you know, highlight marquee victories on their resume. So for the humans involved in this year's Triple Crown, very satisfying, you know. I think, like, if you had to draw it up and say, what would you like to see win? You like to see trainers win who have put in the time, who have done the deed for so long, and to have the reward for them. And for jockeys, you like to see, like, that next generation and the young guns. Who's going to take the baton and move on? You know, we've seen the Ortiz brothers win the Belmont in recent years, and now Tyler and you know, for Flavian to win Triple Crown races. I mean, from the people standpoint, it's exactly what you wanted to see. For the horses, maybe it wasn't what you expected. You don't expect to see a 65-to-1 shot put up by DQ. War of Will, a horse who, you know, seemingly may have been off the Triple Crown trail after the Louisiana Derby. You know, maybe not the horse you would expect to win a classic in the middle leg, but he got back, and a credit to his trainer on that. And then Sir Winston, a horse who had more races finishing off the board than he had in the winner's circle in his career going into the Belmont, wins the last leg of the Triple Crown. You know, he's not you know, he's not going to go down as an Fleet Alex or a Point Given winning the Belmont Stakes, but hey, there's Commendables, there's Jazzles, you know, there's horses who win the Belmont Stakes who still become Belmont winners for all time, but may not have had all-time kind of resumes going into it. Maybe Sir Winston's a horse who's ready to turn the corner. Maybe he's a horse for course, you know. I mean, he really didn't have a race this spring that attracted you to him until the race at Belmont in the Peter Pan, and then he came back and ran another good one in Belmont. So maybe he's just better at Belmont than other places. He'll get a chance to prove it this summer, though, at Saratoga, and that'll be, you know, fun to see these horses try to validate themselves. But if I had to put, like, a score or a letter grade on this crop, it's not going to be a very good grade after the Triple Crown. You know, I'm usually one of those guys that is more optimistic on a crop, saying, hey, I think this is going to be a pretty good group, and let's see how they play out over the course of the fall and his four-year-olds. I don't know that this was a great three-year-old crop. I can't say that at this point. And we'll see if they can prove it. You know, I mean, there's still going to be races to come that are going to give them that kind of chance. Maybe we'll see as soon as this weekend with Maximum Security. More likely, you know, you're waiting for Haskell. The traditional races are going to tell us, you know, the Haskell and the Travers. And then when we get to the fall, does anybody try the Jockey Club Gold Cup or one of these other races against Elders and into the Breeders' Cup?
Well, and I, you know, it's always too early. You can't, right. You can't in mid-June be making a determination of what we've got. And on that topic, actually, it's kind of I can slip in another segue of sorts. Jim Gluckson yesterday at Breeders' Cup released this initial Breeders' Cup Classic poll that they're going to do. I got roped into it by Jimmy last week. And, you know, when you look at that list, I mean, I'm looking actually at the one that I submitted. I mean, the 10 that I submitted, and I did not put a 3-year-old Jeremy on my list. I did not sense.
I don't know how you would at this point. Yeah.
That's what I thought.
Don't know who it would be.
Well, they're all there.
Security would be the only one that I think that could even enter the discussion. And that's more projection than, you know,
I agree.
Say, okay, well, nobody's beating him. I think he might be that much better than these. But, you know, that's a lot of projection. I don't think there's any resume that would put a 3-year-old in that top 10 at this point. I agree with you.
I'm glad to hear you say that because when I saw the list, I was a little surprised. The Maximum Security ended up fourth. Omaha Beach, who I don't know how you put him on any list, not knowing his status. He just got back to Mandela this week. War of Will and Tacitus. So four 3-year-olds are on this list, and I'll give you the 10 that I put on. Thundersnow McKenzie, Vino Rosso Giftbox, Catholic Boy Tenfold, Quip, Gunavera, Lone Sailor, and Yoshida. I'm sorry, I don't see any of the 3-year-olds right now superseding those older horses.
Maximum Security over Lone Sailor would be like the only debate. The rest,
I like Lone Sailor.
I don't even think much of a discussion, you know?
Yeah.
And look, I mean, I like Omaha Beach. I'm a big fan of him, but, you know, I mean, I don't know how. The one thing about polls are this, you know, I mean, we can have a Twitter debate on these things and stuff like that. They don't really accomplish anything. But polls, are they a credit for your resume, or are they a projection of your ability? You know, and that's the thing. You know, is it about your resume, or is it about your talent? Then maybe some people could start to bring some of these other horses into the equation, you know. And to put any 3-year-old in there against the older horses at this point, you have to use the talent argument, right? I mean, there's just not enough. Maybe if a horse wins, you know, 2/3 of the Triple Crown or something, of course, then you say, all right, well, he's certainly better than some of these, you know, second-tier older horses. But, you know, it's not a phenomenal, overwhelming mile-and-a-quarter group. I mean, right now, I wouldn't argue with anybody that thought Thunder Snow was the best horse for the Breeders' Cup Classic right now today.
Mm-hmm. That's who I voted, you know, first. That's who I put
okay.
first.
Yeah. So, like I said, I don't know the order that it was in. Honestly, I saw that there was a poll, but I didn't even take an interest in it enough to look at it, and it's shame on me, I guess.
No, it's just starting.
The final results were, but I didn't know that there were 4 3-year-olds in there, which is kind of, you know, I'm like you. I don't agree with that at all. But, yeah, I mean, like, Thunder Snow, I thought, ran one of the best races of anybody that we saw in defeat. Because everybody's looking at McKenzie with the trouble. Okay, but we know McKenzie, turned back and won at 7/8. You know, we know he can win that kind of race. Mottola, he stretched out, and we know he's fast. Thunder Snow was the one really doing something that was, okay, is he transformative? We know he's a good mile and a quarter horse in Dubai. We know he's run over here in the U.S. and had, you know, some issues here and there, but has run some good races here as well. He did the one thing that was out of the box. You know, he came to the U.S. and took on our fastest horses and was right there at the wire with them. So I think he ran one of the more impressive races. It shows kind of like the old precisionist that you can do anything. You know? And to me, those were always the great horses. And Steve, I wanted to mention this somewhere, and I really didn't have an outlet for it, but it may be here because we're just talking about, like, Thunder Snow turning back and running this race at a mile. People talk about tinkering with the Triple Crown. Maybe the races need to be spread out further apart and things like that. Put this what if out there. What if the Belmont Stakes was shortened to a mile, to a one-turn mile? The mile and a half is an anachronism. Nobody says it's any really – it doesn't do you any good for breeding, you know, that sort of deal like that. It's the end of the series. If we're talking in this society now where everybody's got to worry about safety and how the horses are, you know, can we make them run three times in 5 weeks? What if the third leg was the shortest? And then think about how maybe you would get some of the top sprinters in the game taking on the Kentucky Derby winner at a mile. And, like, you know, just all the intrigue that we had about this year's Met Mile was Mottola against the Routers, right? I mean, that was the really cool aspect of it. And it had a lot of intrigue and how fast and a fast horse at Belmont going a mile. You know, you get the long run. You've got the one turn. The stretch is still a decent stretch run. It's not as long as Churchill or Pimlico, but it's still, you know, it's still over 1,000 feet there in the stretch run at Belmont to the wire. What if the Belmont Stakes was a mile?
You're nuts. You're out of your mind. It's preposterous. I would rather do a Canadian, do what the Canadian Triple Crown does and put them on turf as much as.
I thought a mile was the American standard. It's the race that makes the stallion. That's what everybody tells us.
Well,
so you want Belmont Stakes filled with Jazzle and Commendable and horses who don't run in all three legs of the series anymore and Sir Winston's and some of these other horses.
What's wrong with Sir Winston? He's an awesome again. That is an absolute picture of a horse. I mean, and you know, it's somewhat, you know, it is somewhat random.
Right. I mean, it's at least look at the 3-year-old champions. The Preakness produces the 3-year-old champion 80% of the time, you know, in the last 20 years. Well, the Belmont doesn't determine the champion 3-year-old hardly ever, you know, unless it's Baffert winning a Triple Crown race. I mean, of the three Triple Crown races, the one with the most flukish result is the Belmont.
Well, hold on.
20 years, you can't argue with that.
I will argue with it.
The last 20 years is the Belmont.
Pull up for a second.
I know you love New York. I can't argue with you against New York.
No, it's not. It's got nothing to do with New York. It's got to do with the Triple Crown attempts. The seemingly flukish results have come most frequently in Triple Crown tries. And in fact, there's a piece at Baseball HQ this week about pitchers particularly that had one bad outing so far this year, and that if you netted out their one bad outing, what their stats are, and you know, it's basically saying, you know, take away the outlier.
Sure.
The overall record, when you look at it, and I gotta know, you want to go back 20 years? Go back here, Lemon Drop Kid. Then you had Commendable. That's a quirky result. Point Given. Then you had Sarava, which was a Triple Crown try. Empire Maker was a Triple Crown try and an outstanding stallion. Triple Crown try. Birdstone, who has been a modest. He's been a modest stallion. Fleet Alex has been a success. Jazzle, you know, Jazzle was a tiny horse, and by all rights, you know, didn't necessarily, even though he's by Seeking the Gold, didn't necessarily have a particular reason to be a sought after sire. Rags to Riches beat Curlin a nose. Curlin being, you know, along with Tappet, the preeminent sire in America. Datara, there's a Triple Crown try anomaly. Summerbird didn't get enough of a chance, and then as soon as he got exported and died, he started to get results. Drosselmeyer, not a particular fashionable. Ruler on Ice, Union Rags, not going to argue with him. He's off to a very solid start. Palace Malice's babies are being well received. Tonalist is going to expect it to be a success. American Pharoah is arguably the hottest sales progeny internationally right now. The results on that front are not ugly.
As they become sires, you know. But as you talk about, like, who the horses are that won those races and what they did for their career coming in or coming out of, that's when I talk about that the most flukish results of the three Triple Crown races has been the Belmont. I mean, in the last 20 years, I've just looked at it and glanced, you know, on the Equibase list of the stakes winners. There's seven or eight in the last 20 years that weren't much, you know, that were just okay horses. You know, they weren't anything.
Drosselmeyer did win a Breeders' Cup Classic, too.
Oh, I'm not counting Drosselmeyer. I mean, here are the names. I mean, if you go back to there, Commendable, not that much. Sarava, not that much. Jazzle, not that much. Datara, not that much. Ruler on Ice, not that much. Palace Malice, he was okay.
Whoa,
nothing
wrong with Palace Malice.
Creator, Taprit, and now you take Sir Winston. So that's seven or eight. So that's what I say. If you put Palace Malice in the really good horse category then, But when you look at the Preakness, you say, well, you're what, 13 of the last 16 were champions, you know, at the end of the year, that sort of thing. Seven favorites.
You're not
30 to 40% of the winners were horses that weren't classic type horses. You know,
I would say 25. I trim it back. Five to me, it's 5 out of 20 are moderate types. Go back further. Was Danzig Connection? Was Danzig?
Though. That's the whole thing. It's the last. We're saying that nobody breeds for distance anymore, and nobody trains for distance, and nobody wants to run a distance of ground anymore. So, what's the one sentence everybody says? None of these horses have gone a mile and a half, and none of them probably will again. That's like the number one thing going into it. All I'm saying is, like, it's food for thought. I'm not saying that we should do it, but I think, like, something like that. What I'm saying is the excitement we saw for this year's Met Mile, how could you bottle that and do it somewhere else? Maybe the Belmont Stakes at that track. Maybe their signature race. I mean, the mile has been a sexy race for years. You know?
Yeah, no doubt.
You know, going back to Dr. Fager and those kind of things like that, and we don't have the sexiness of a mile. And if the game is about speed and the game is about, you know, could you get a bigger field size at a mile than a mile and a half? I think so. You know, and from a gambling standpoint, would it be a better – would gamblers feel more confident betting a mile or a mile and a half? I don't like even betting the Belmont Stakes because it's a mile and a half, and I think I'm throwing my money at something – just like when they put the 2 mile race the day before on the turf.
I nailed that. I crushed that. I
other people might, but I'm just telling you I would. So
I don't know. I just I
don't find it interesting. I don't find complete anomalies interesting for a gambling standpoint. I mean, they're nice to talk about and look and see, but, you know, a second tier horse from Europe comes over and wins the 2 mile race and okay. That's fine, because nobody in America is trained to run 2 miles. I mean, Arklow ran a good race, but it's kind of it's flukish. And I fear that the Belmont Stakes becomes a little bit more in that category the further down the line we go with nobody's, you know, geez, the mile and a quarter is keeping everybody out. You know, nobody can get the mile and a quarter, but it's the Derby, so they're running it, you know, that I don't know. I mean, look, we shortened the distance of the Pimlico Special. They went to a mile and a quarter from a mile and 3/16. Just fun stuff to talk about because honestly, we have nothing to talk about.
I hear you. You need to listen to Sid and I on Wednesdays. I think that would be productive because the vast majority of the stallions are sought after and are fetching the best prices are the horses that are, you know, breeding route goers. This whole thing about.
I can care less about the breeding industry. I'll tell you that. So I'm looking at it from a fan and a gambler and somebody who plays the industry from 2-year-old until retirement. You know, what happens before the sales and what happens later in pedigrees and all that kind of stuff like that is of zero concern to me. And I'll just be honest about that. That's not, I could care less who makes a stallion. You know, I mean, we could get into debate about, plenty of things on the breeding side, that are right, wrong. You know, they're good for the game. They're bad for the game. There's a lot of stuff that goes into those conversations. But I'm just talking about strictly from, spreading the Triple Crown out more than 5 weeks apart isn't done for breeding, right? I mean, it's done for the racing side of things. So I'm saying if you wanted to make any tweaks to the Triple Crown, maybe that's one to consider. But if it would adversely affect the breeding industry, I could see that people would go against it. But all I heard for the 3 weeks between the Preakness and the Belmont was that the Met Mile is the race that makes a stallion, and it's the race of the year. And the only race anybody cared about was the daggone Met Mile. You know, that was the big kahuna. And I'm wondering, how do you replicate that?
You don't need to replicate it. You don't need to replicate it. The reason the Met was getting that kind of buildup was because we knew that the Triple Crown portion of the season was going to be muted by the absence of the official and Derby winner and the first horse across the wire. That's why there was this alternative dialogue that the Met Mile was going to be the standout race on the card and as anticipated or more anticipated than the last leg of the classics. And that's fine.
Well, it would have been the best Met Mile in years kind of talk if that race was on Memorial Day like it used to be. So what I'm saying is, like, how can you replicate? I think what made the Met Mile sexy was the different horses, that you had Thunder Snow, that you had the top handicap for Bob Baffert, you had the top sprinter for Steve Asmussen, and it was an intersectional game. It was that SEC Big East challenge in basketball that you don't get to see these teams match up with these teams very often. So how do you get that to go? You know, how do you get Alabama to play Georgetown or whatever? You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what made it so interesting. And the fact that the mile is a crossroads, the fact that it's one turn at Belmont, you couldn't – and you say, well, why is – the Breeders' Cup the dirt mile tries to do the exact same thing. You know, but that has all the other races going on at the same time. There's a big handicap race. There's a big sprint race. You know, so it dilutes it, and it's a two-turn race at most of the racetracks. So, the sprinter doesn't necessarily want to go in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile when it's around two turns. Belmont is so unique with that one-turn mile, and the fact that the routers have a chance in there, as we saw, and ran so well, I just think it's sexy and interesting. And, could you create more, could Belmont come up, Belmont's coming up with a turf series, right? Okay, mm-hmm. Now we're going to do the three-year-old turf the series or whatever like that. I'm wondering if some really good one-turn dirt miles around the country couldn't be sexy enough to bring together the best sprinters and the best routers with enough money, and it's a meet-in-the-middle thing. That's really what I'm talking about. And
I got it.
Replacing the Belmont Stakes with that, I get it. I know that's radical and ain't ever happening. But the thought of that is very intriguing. We talk about, the sprinters are completely out of the Triple Crown now. They can't earn any points. They can't, they can't get into the Derby, that sort of deal like that. Now, all of a sudden, you've got a good sprinter, a promise is fulfilled, or somebody like that who may be a Belmont horse versus one of Dale's deep, plug-along, medal count kind of horses, like that. I mean, maybe he's got somebody else for it. In addition, the sprinter and the router. I think the field would be, I think you could fill fields and with some interesting horses. But, you know, not the Belmont Stakes, I'm sure. But, you know, I threw it out there. It gave us some good conversation.
Well, Jeremy, terrific job as always.
In the first 10 seconds, though.
Well, the season for Countdown of the Crown, always invaluable, and the information you churn out week to week is remarkable. So well done, and we'll start to gear up for 2020.
That's right, in Saratoga Del Mar, not too far off. So
now, Jeremy Plonk, everybody, horse player now, and you know, Jeremy. By the way, we have not been. I don't know why you haven't mentioned it when we talked on Tuesdays, but. The night school sessions, you know, you've been running, and we don't want people to forget.
We have 10 new lessons up for 2019. We shortened them this year to about 20 minutes in length. We're trying to give the viewers more of what they want. We know that shorter videos and audio clips are vastly more popular. So what we're trying to do is truncate the night schools into very focused topics. And 10 new lessons so far for 2019 are up on the website. Go to horseplayernow.com and click on the night school link, and you can get those. And then we'll come back in the fall. We start back again in August, and we'll run 10 more. So we'll have 20 lessons this year coming up after a little summer break. But 10 of them are up there now, and be sure to check them out. Also on YouTube. You know, we put them on YouTube this year for the first time, and people are finding them there along with a lot of our videos. You know, 900,000 downloads of our Horse Player Now videos on YouTube over the years. We're hoping to get that up over 1 million here by the end of the summer. So go check out our YouTube page, and we're going to start putting more and more information on there, youtube.com/horseplayernow. A lot of great videos there from the past. And, you know, there's a great, you know, interviews, Andy Byer talking speed figures and things like that. Caton Bradar's paddock handicapping video that we have up there is one of the most valuable resources that's ever been done on visual handicapping. I really recommend people go check that out, because if you're wondering what to look for in the paddock, we've got cameras in the paddock and Caton's expert commentary talking about it and stuff. And you just won't see a video like that anywhere else. So that's one I really recommend to people, especially as it's summertime, because you're going to get out more and you're going to go to the track more often than staying at home. You walk out to the paddock. You want to know what you're looking at. And Caton's video is really helpful in that respect.
Jeremy Plonk, everybody. Horse Player Now. Take advantage. HorsePlayerNow.com. Jeremy, thanks. And we'll catch up as the summer progresses. Maybe some Haskell and some Travers talk.
Absolutely. Anytime. Good luck to everybody out there playing today.
I appreciate it. We're going to take a quick break and probably a short one. Trying to connect with Joe. And I'm texting back and forth with Joe O about Imprimus. And he's in the hotel. He has to go back for feeding because it's 4:30 there, give or take 3:30, and so we're going to try to get Joe Orsino in here. Let's do this, Joe. I'm going to see if Joe can try calling us. Maybe that's what we'll do. And in fact, Joe, send me the 954. Number, because that might be, because I don't think the 800, the 855 number will work from the UK, but maybe he can reach you. I don't know why. Yeah, Joe's trying Joe constantly here, and it's like ringing with no answer. I'm excited for Joe, and you know, Imprimus, a horse that we've had a lot of fun talking about it. It became pretty obvious last year that, you know, there was something good happening. And we went to Joe, you know, early on. Here we go. Just bear with me here. Here we go. All right. Let's see if Joe... see if this works. All right. We'll see if, it's funny because I'm seeing everything that you normally would if it was domestic, like, you know, when it says delivered and then it says red and you can see him typing. I can see Joe typing, but for whatever reason, when our Joe tries to call him, the phone just rings and rings and rings. It is amazing because, you know, we'll talk to Nick Luck tomorrow. In addition, by the way, to Nick Luck tomorrow and Marty McGee, We're going to, and then it goes to voicemail, Joe Lott's telling me. We're going to have Dave Hill. And if you didn't see Dave's piece the other day, late last week, he wrote a sports betting piece that is a must read. He talks to a variety of pro sports bettors, including some couple of overlap, including Alan Denkinson. And it talks about how the casinos are basically pushing out the pro sports bettor. Yeah, and I'll send the link. So between now and tomorrow morning, in fact, Dave will join us off the top early on, hour one tomorrow. The wonderfully talented Dave Hill, and we'll also get an update. We'll also get an update on his book when The Vapors is coming out. We need to know. It should have been out already. So we'll talk to Dave Hill. Joe wants me to take a break. So we'll take a break here, and we'll see if we can't scare up Joe O. Otherwise, we'll turn to Tony Black and Steve Askin. And we'll just have to root for Joe next week at Royal Ascot. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At The Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9000. 938-4643.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
When you grow up, live like a good boy oughta. And your mama takes a shine to put their son. Gonna miss it and your house has got an empty bed.
We're back at the races, bottom of the hour, 90 in, 90 to come, including Tony Black, Steve Haskin, and we got to get to Rich Ang. I feel terrible. We keep missing Rich, and you know, when we were on the road, just sort of stacked up and got away from us. Deck a little bit clearer this week, in part because I feel terrible. Dick Powell, Dick is out of the hospital, and so he is home. That's good news. And he's going to rest up, and we'll talk to him next week. And we'll get plenty of help on the Royal Ascot coverage from him. And of course, the racing starts Tuesday. The big they don't waste any time, Royal Ascot. And speaking of Royal Ascot, perfect. Look at that. We'll talk about a great lead-in. Joe Orsino, who's going to look fabulous in that morning jacket and the top hat. Can't wait for those pictures, Joe. Good morning. Good afternoon there.
Good afternoon here. Yes, I went and got fitted 2 days ago, and it was quite interesting.
It's going to be great.
It was quite interesting, too. I got a good chuckle.
It's going to be great. That's the best part. That's the best part of Americans going to Royal Ascot. I was talking to Andy Serling, and Andy said, "Is anybody else beside Wesley going over?" I said, "Joe O." And he said, "Oh, my gosh, and Primus." He goes, "That's a great idea." You know, usually Andy's kind of anti, interrupting campaigns. But it really, the timing worked perfectly for you, and it feels like he's really competitive.
He's very competitive, and the timing was good because from the race at Keeneland in the Shakertown, he gave me 11 weeks. So I really got a good freshening into him, and I was able to train him. And then when we flew him over, we're training him here, and everything's going pretty good.
How'd they give us that portion of the update? It's really – no longer a trip than going west. So, I suppose that that's that part of it is not a big deal. But what were you concerned about when it came to the travel part?
Well, you're always concerned about the flight, because it's a long day. I mean, he left my barn at 5 o'clock in the morning. 5 o'clock in the evening on the second on Sunday. Oh, it was actually Saturday night, and he went to a farm which was about half hour from Miami Airport, and he stayed there till 11:30 at night. Got on a van, went to the airport, and the flight left at 3:30 in the morning.
Oof.
And then he had a 7.5 hour flight ahead of him. So it's a long day, and you never know what that's going to do to a horse. But I'll tell you, Steve, he bounced out of it way better than I thought he would. And since he's been over here, he's blossomed. He looks great. It's cold here. It's been raining. It's damp. And the horse is just thriving on it.
How about that? And certainly the other ancillary portions of Primus's start Tuesday in the King Stand. Talk about the mount and landing about as appropriate and as talented a guy as there is for this occasion.
Yeah, we actually had a press conference today in Newmarket, and Frankie came in and he came right up to me, and we were talking about it. And obviously we're thrilled to have him. So he will be an added bonus. I mean, he knows the course, he knows what to do, he knows where he's going to want him, and he said to me, he says, "Joe, I watched that race at Keeneland 100 times." So I mean, I think he's pretty excited about him too. It was fun when he was up there on the podium today, and he was saying, they were asking him about him, and he says, "Well, he's the best American sprinter there is." So I was like, okay, because he doesn't know about World of Trouble.
Well, that's just as well. There is some serious competition in here, including that very nice Blue Point and Batash. I mean, they're going to vie for favoritism. But looking at the international markets, you're trading as about the fourth or fifth choice, 8, 9, 10 to 1. So he's getting plenty of respect in the betting shops.
Yes, and the guys told me, through the Megler, we had a barbecue last night, and I sat with him, and you know, he's really into the sheep. I know you know Steve. He told me that now that they know that he's in and is on the board, then the people will start betting him, and it'll probably come down even more. So he said, you know, we're getting a lot of respect for the horses that are in there.
Well, and you know, you know Wesley a long, long time, and did you get any direction, any advice from him when you started to chew this around? And of course, the Breeze Easy people, they won with Shang last year.
Yeah, and you know, and that was probably our final decision whether to make the trip or not, because they enjoyed it so much last year and they wanted to come back, and they just thought that if we could do it, then we should probably try and fit it into our plans. But no, Wesley's been a great help. He, you know, he's helped me with all the stuff that I needed to do and put me in touch with all the right people, but, he's letting me train my horse.
Well, and of course, the one difficulty or the one hiccup, and I'm not convinced. I smell some sort of a trick here. Apparently one piece of luggage got misplaced, yeah. and it was your wife and daughter's bag, but I got a feeling that that it's in the trunk of the car. This was all a plot to let them go to Harrods and do some shopping.
Yeah, you would think, but no, they really had to be their bag, which everybody knows about. it did arrive, though. It arrived later that night. Much later that night, and it's just part of traveling. Between that and the rental car not being available for an hour, and see if you know if you like these roads over here. It's driving over here. It's another world. We're driving out to the farm right now where we're training in Moncton, and my wife's driving, and they've got every 20 feet there's a roundabout.
I love it.
Dangerous, but we're getting through it.
Well, when it comes to picking a way across the course, what's your feeling about the draw and about you know the way the field you know will typically you know split into two groups? Any talk about that with Frankie, or wait till the draw
well,
for
you
that?
You know what? I was going over it last night with Stephen Negler, and they're down. It started with 42. Then it was 27 after the first declaration, and now it's down to 17. And on Sunday, we officially enter where they do it a little differently here. You email it in, and at 10 o'clock it closes. So you have to send your email in. You have to tell them what equipment the horse is wearing and what jockey is riding your horse, and then that's the final straw. So after Sunday, we'll know exactly how many are going to be in there. I looked at the list last night, I'm like 10, 12 to 1, but there's five or six horses out of the 17 that are 100 to 1. 3-year-old, 2-year-old, filly, 3-year-old. I mean, they probably won't even run. They'll run in other races, but they're cross-entered. So, I mean, it may only be a 9 or 10 horse field. So
Interesting.
When it comes down to it, it's down to 17 right now. So, and you know what? I mean, I don't know. I don't have a feel for it because I just don't know what to expect. But I do know I can just say to Frankie, good luck. Because, why would I tell him what to do?
How about the straight?
I'm giving him a horse that's wound up and ready to go. So, the rest is going to be in his hands.
What's your feeling toward a straight as opposed to, you know, around the turn?
I don't know, but I do know one thing. My horse has handled just about anything I've asked him to do, from a soft surface to a really firm, sandy surface, at Gulfstream to Monmouth, just a dirty surface. The only track he really never liked, and that's only because he lost a shoe and he kind of wrenched his ankle a little bit, was at Parks. And he still ran and only got beat a half a length for all of it. So, what's the difference? It's just straight to him. He handles everything else. So I guess he'll handle going straight.
Well, Joe, it feels like a really a not so much daring maneuver, but a very good calculated risk, and would be just delighted to, you know, to be able to call you, you know, Tuesday late or Wednesday the next day, and be able to talk about the thrill. You know, we've seen already, you know, the American connections and how much fun it is. I can remember the first time we were still an afternoon show, and we reached Wesley with one of the early wins, and the entire group were in some pub, and they were all just hammered, and it was hysterical. Yeah. They were passing the phone around and talking about how much fun it was and how something they'll never forget. So no matter what, it'll be a great experience, but it also feels like you're going in with a good chance.
Yeah, I still got you, Steve. Yeah.
Okay.
I would welcome the phone call. I know that.
Well, at Joe O, everybody, and in Primus, Tuesday, we'll listen to the King's Stand live, part of the great opening day of Royal Ascot. And I know they'll be betting on what color the Queen is wearing. I'm not sure if they're going to be betting on your outfit, but I can't wait. I can't wait to see the picture.
I'm going to have a black hat.
That's exactly. There we go.
Take that bet.
Joe, get lucky over there. Really, really glad that you're doing this.
Well, thank you, and we hope we can make everybody proud.
Without fail. Joe O, everybody. Joe Orsino, and the opportunity at Royal Ascot. Coming up on Tuesday, opening day, the King's Stand, and part of that just incredible, opening days of what else you got? Is that the St. James and the Queen Anne and the Coventry and the Ascot Stakes day one? So looking forward to Tuesday. It's become one of our favorite weeks. It's certainly a favorite week for Steve Askin. We're going to talk to him next. We've got Tony to get to as well, Tony Black. We owe Tony a visit. We didn't get to him last week ahead of Belmont, but I want to talk to him about Joel Rosario's ride and more. Rich Ang as well. So I think we better get to Steve Haskin first, Joe. Let's do that, and then we'll swing back around to Tony and Rich. Stay with us back after this.